You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries to find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
There were these prints up in Boston.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams, like break in day. We'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is so like
everything else. They just were too realistic
and
to be
frozen like a tree.
The hand was freaking
out.
Into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot creature lives.
Bigfoot. A movie.
Right now.
At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
What you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Moxon Joe. Well, the party they're gonna have out in the St. John's walls. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. If you'd like to join us in our live discussions during the program, just dial in and join us at 347-996-5877. That's 347-996-5877. Just dial in and wait for the moderator to announce your area code and bring you on to the show. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Marco Bill. Something happened at the very last minute here, and Tom had to go to attend to some urgent business. So, tonight you've got Java Bob, Alex, and me. And, of course, we have some pretty good stuff lined up here tonight. What I'd like to do is I'd like to bring Alex on and have him introduce himself and do the shout-outs. Alex, how are you tonight?
Doing great, Marco. How you doing? Everything okay?
Everything's fine.
Just likes to make me feel special. That's why he didn't make it.
Hey, you are special. Well, for everybody's information, if you go up on www.bigfootlive.com, the radio webpage, and you look under where Alex is listed, and you'll see a link on there, and it'll be a slideshow of all the pictures that Alex just sent from this past weekend. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, kind of recovering from the weekend, and, you know, it wasn't quite as bad as it could have been once I was able to make it out of there. And it's not like it's not someplace you can't survive for a short time and a long time. I mean, we all know Youngblood was up there for a few months, and Java Bob, too, is up there for a couple months. So, it's, you know, you can sustain yourself up there. It's just a matter of I couldn't leave for a little while. So that was kind of a little scary. And be trapped all alone, because right now there's nobody up there. There was some hunters up there, but they left. So,
well, you know, Alex, I've seen a little stove in that little cabin, but I didn't see any wood.
There's a big pile of wood right next to it, just out of sight. So there was plenty of wood.
I was wondering. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It was just
That's great. Yep, Larry had it well stocked up, so I was safe like that, and we'll get to that. You know, I lost my train of thoughts, but really what we're supposed to be doing right now is a shout-out, so let's get into that. Let's say hello to everybody on the chat room. Hi, Marco.
Well, yeah. Say hi to our chat room friends, and also we'll just give some shout-outs to some of our friends and extended family, too, if we...
Excellent. We got Java Bob coming on, so we're set. Well, there's Alyssa, Clover, and Ann just plugging in. So hello, Alyssa. We got Bill Green, the Bigfoot. We got Gap 618. How you doing, guys? And then, of course, we got Georgia Bigfoot. Is that Jan, or is that Bigfoot a different Bigfoot hunter from Georgia? And then we got Java Bob, of course, and Marco, and Mike K in Ohio. The Snake Man of Paris, Texas. Bruce, how you doing, my friend? How's our business? We kind of hope it's slow, the people in Texas, but we want you to be busy. And then we got the Secret 48. How you doing? How's everyone doing out there? And then all you guests, you know, hello, and if you want to be anonymous and incognito, that's okay. We got a full chat room tonight. It's growing every second, 14, 15 people. Everybody's logging in right now, having a great time. Marco, who's our extended family? Hey, there's Dave-O.
Well, we got our friends out there. Your compadres out there, and JC. Got Dave-O. We got some other people out there. We got RB. There's a whole bunch.
You know what happens? There's so many that we lose track. You know,
there's
Father Ray. There's
a list of about 150, 200 people.
Exactly.
And that's not even all of them. I mean, that's just a few of the people we have.
Father Ray, we're not able to listen tonight. We don't know. At least he's not in the chat room. I see Chuck just logged in, too. How you doing, Chuck? Everybody, I guess Chuck isn't doing the 20-hour shift tonight. He's able to listen to the show. So thanks, Chuck. Java Bob, of course, we know everybody from Arizona was probably listening up in the reservation. AK and Chris and Star and all the fine people like Catherine Montoya, that great police officer that always comes and says hi when we're up there. She came and visited me when I was up there and came over and said hi to AK. Let me take some pictures and kind of interview her. So she's wonderful. You might remember her from the news interview with you guys up there a few years back. So that was pretty cool. She had the sighting when she went to investigate a report from a citizen. The creature was still on the property, I believe, and you probably know the story better than me, Bob.
Oh, yeah. She's a star in the movie, as a matter of fact. When the policewoman was there talking about answering the call and seeing the creature, that was Kathleen. She's awesome. She's just awesome. Met her mother, too. Yeah. Nice.
Yes.
Alex, I'm not sure that everybody is up to speed on what you were talking about when you started the show, when you started talking about the pictures and explaining that what it was like up there. I don't think they understand. Not everybody. Some of the people that have been to the site will know that you were stuck up there. And a lot of people may not. So you might go through that a little bit more detail there. Just give them a taste of it, and then we'll get into it in detail later on.
Yeah, it's just kind of, that's why I was kind of got into it a little more than I should have, because I knew people didn't know what we were talking about yet. And I was just kind of answering Marco's question about the website. But it's the story you did on the website, Bob, and, you know, with my story and my pitches, but you put it all together great, is spectacular. And as soon as I got home, that's what I was reading. And just it looks great, too. Well done. I love how you introduced us by having a little bit of the article from October. And that full article can be found on my website and probably on your website, too. And I got the link if you need it, if you don't have it. It's still out there. it's the feature story for October Times publication, so that was a great story. You know, I wanted to also do a special shout-out, and I see she's actually online right now, to one of my members who's, she's always been continuously there for us, but she's been away for a little while. Now, she was out in the field with me last year, so she's really only been away from the website. She's still been out in the field, and that's my biggest help in AZCRO, and that's Phoebe. So we know Mitch is always there, but Phoebe was probably the most involved person next to Mitch, and I see she's gotten back involved today in the forum, and I don't know if she's listening to the radio show, but if you are, Phoebe, hello, and give us a call. And she's online right now posting on the forum, so you guys want to go post on the AZCRO forum. It's azcro.lefora.com. And that's LEFORA.com. So AZCRO.LEFORA.com. And you can post and discuss all the investigations that are going on in Arizona, anything that's going on throughout the crypto world, and of course Bigfoot's the most popular. But, you know, you can also discuss the UFO incidents, other creatures, jaguars, giant snakes. There's a section for Bigfoot West. There's a section for Bigfoot Live Radio and Searching for Bigfoot. And, of course, there's a section for Crypto for Connors. So you can discuss any of those activities. And you never know. You might have J.C. Ancia. You might have Davo. You might have even Java Bob Ancia. He's there every once in a while. So it's really cool. And you can get to the Bigfoot Live chat room from the AZCRO forum. We got it embedded in the site. Bar, so that's pretty cool too.
You know what's exciting to me about this, Alex, is you know, on this show very often you hear us talk about how different groups have got to learn to work together and support each other, and this is just a live example of how we put ourselves where our mouths are. I mean, this is exactly what we're doing. You help host the show, you were out investigating the site with us, you're there, we're there for you, you're there for us. I mean, that's the whole idea. That's what everybody needs to emulate. And we're proud to be able to work with you.
Well, I'm just proud to be part of Searching for Bigfoot Incorporated in any chance I can get. So anytime you ask me for help, you know I'll be there. And oh, my God, there's Phoebe. She just popped up in the chat room, so she is there. She's probably listening to the show. So hello, Phoebe. And that's what I try to do in Arizona. There really is no formal AZCRO, with just a bunch of people that discuss things together and kind of collaborate whenever possible out in the field. But a lot of times we're all out by ourselves. So, you know, you can still be another group and just come over to AZCRO and discuss things. You can do the same thing kind of at Bigfoot Live, only on a national level. So that's really cool. And AZCRO, we're kind of local. But Searching for Bigfoot in the Bigfoot Live chat room, you can discuss things with everybody from all over the country. So that's really cool. And you never know where the guests on the show are going to be coming from. So that's another cool thing. And, of course, we got Java Bob, the greatest guy of all.
Keep on talking. I love it. I love it. I love it. But, you know, Alex, while we're talking and sharing some love, let's talk a little bit, just a couple of minutes, about Steve Dismore. Steve Dismore, Alex talked to Alex, and Alex told me to call him, and I called him and talked to him earlier. And his wife is not doing well. She's very ill, and they don't think she's going to make it very long. So I think it would be I'm asking that those of you who are inclined will help us in a little bit of a prayer chain and pray for his wife and for him and his family. So just keep Steve Dismore in your thoughts and your prayers, and his wife in your thoughts and your prayers, and maybe God will find a way to straighten this all out for him.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, the one thing about Steve, he's always been there for me. The few times that I've hosted the show and we've needed a guest, we call up Steve, what do you got going on? And you know, as sick as he's been, he's still out in the field, running around out in the woods with his family, with his kids, with his son, with his wife, his girlfriend, companions out there, And his wife, of course, we know is sick. So we wish her the best. Wish Big Steve nothing but the best, because he's always there for us. He always comes on the show, tells us what's going on in Kentucky. Same thing, you know, he'd be there for you. You need something investigated in Kentucky, if it's in his reach, he's going to be there for you. He's like a big, gentle giant who probably literally would give you the shirt off his back.
Yeah, it gives us two gentle giants there, doesn't it?
It sure does. But,
well, you know, Java Bob and Alex, way back up there in Montana, Blackfoot Nation, good friend and family friend here, Bruce Schilt, is our first guest. And if you like Java Bob, let me put Bruce on.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. Thank you.
Bruce, are you, can you, whoops, I unmuted you. I'm hoping this thing is going to unmute for you.
Hello, Java Bob, Marco.
Here you go.
Oh, hi, Bruce. How's Donna and the kids?
Oh, we're doing good. Better than yesterday.
Is that right? What happened yesterday?
Nothing. It was a good day. Today's a better one.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
You know, Bruce, when Marco introduced you as a member of the Blackfoot tribe, I remember what you told me when I asked you if it was Blackfoot or Blackfeet. Would you tell our audience what you told me, if you remember?
I don't remember. I probably said black feet.
You said we have 2 feet.
Oh.
Well, thanks for embarrassing me.
I'm sorry. But, you know, I never forgot that. And, you know, it helps me remember. So I correct as many people as I can now.
Well, you correct.
Yeah. Good about
that. You know, when I first came up and met you, Bruce, I think I shared this with you. I was a little nervous because of the reputation of the Blackfeet as being such fierce warriors. And I was one of my first times out in basically another country, because I was on your lands and you know, deep within your reservation there. And at first, I was a little nervous until I met you and your family. And by golly, you've become some of my closest friends. I mean, now I have so much respect for the Blackfeet. And all because you're such a good ambassador, and because all the people that we met have been so open and helpful and supported us, and we try to support you. It's just been a blessing to me, and I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. We feel the same way about you.
You know, there's always something exciting going up out there in Montana, you know, and this has got to be one of the most beautiful places in the whole world. We stayed there in just outside of Browning in a little town, out like Glacier Park, and
yeah.
there were these big iron gates, like these walls, these big iron walls up alongside in front of the motel that blocked the beautiful view of the Rocky Mountains. You know, you had to get up, you know, on the second story so to see them. And I asked what those were for. Can you share with everybody what those big gates are for? If you know what I'm talking about.
You mean the train trestle, the tunnel
What happened is I asked Bruce, why did they put those big old walls like up there? And he said, oh, because last year the winds came through and blew a train off of the tracks.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And then he went on to tell me that's not even the windy area. The windy area is down the highway.
Yeah, it is. It blows my brother's shed apart every year, and he just lives across the fence from us. We live in the brush. But, it gets 100-plus miles an hour here.
Yeah, we're talking about some wild country and some of the most amazing sightings and experiences you can imagine. Bruce, why don't you share with the audience a little bit about what's going on up there now?
Okay, well, it's been about a month ago. Last month, there was some people called this town, the next town down, they called for the cops because there was a Bigfoot looking in their windows and monkeying around down there. This is about 30 miles away, and the cops from the other town said, well, you got to call the Blackfeet cops because we're off the reservation. It's out of our jurisdiction. So they had to call the cops from Browning, even though it's farther away, but they went down there and investigated it, and I never did really get the gist of the story, I mean, the whole truth of it. But we went down and we asked some people down there where my grandpa used to stay. Shady Grove is the area. And we went down there and asked some people, and they didn't know anything about it. But somebody called in from down there along that valley there, and right down from the road from us, well, just up over the hill, there's a Cutbank Creek. That's where Hiram stays. That's maybe 2 or 3 miles, and that's the guy that his dog brought home the plague that nobody could identify. I think that's on the movie, too.
It sure is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something, one of the most popular scenes, too. We get a lot of feedback about that.
And just, well, down the road, oh, I would say maybe, oh, 6 or 8 miles, there's a little Indian village down there. Probably maybe 100, 200 people live there. And this is where I got two different tracks, plaster casts of a Bigfoot. They had a Bigfoot down in the bottom there and left some tracks in the mud by the river. And after work, I went down and got poured plaster and got the casts. And this guy that lives there, he was telling me last about a week or so ago that Bigfoot's been hollering around down there in the bottom. Well, he's around here someplace. And
well, you know, there's some great stories. You're talking about Hiram. When we were at Hiram's house, his wife was sharing a story about seeing from her breakfast window, from the table there, looking up on the hill behind their house,
yeah,
on that ridge, and seeing what looked like little chimpanzees or little monkeys, you know, kind of running around, and then a big one came and gathered them up, and they walked out of sight, and then all the cows started walking in circles up there, and then she heard them all screaming, and when we were at her house one night, we set off some tapes, you know, of the Sierra sounds to see if we'd get a reply. And everybody stayed on the front side of their house, and I walked around to the back side, closer to the mountains, way behind them. And I could hear something answering. They couldn't hear it at the front of the house, but I could hear it from back there. There was something answering those calls. So
yeah.
I know that's a hot area. I know it's a real hot area.
Yeah.
And that's real close to you. That's only a couple miles down the road from you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just over the hill there. But you know, one night, Donna told me to go out and get something out of the car, and it was this sun just going down, and I went out, and I got almost to the wood pile there, and I could hear this noise way back in the mountains there. And it would sound like a Bigfoot hollering way back there. And I kept standing there. I was standing there for maybe 15 minutes listening to it. It wouldn't shut up. And so Donna sent my little girl, Tony, out to see what was the matter with me because I got stuck to the sidewalk here. And she came out and she said, Mom, said, what's the matter? What you doing? And I said, well, I'm listening to this Bigfoot. Listen. And she was listening to it, too. So we was both stuck there for a while. And then Donna came out, and I told her, listen to this Bigfoot. He's hollering way back there. And about that time, he just shut up. He quit hollering. But, you know, but, yeah, they're all around here.
Yeah, that's what happens. You get out, and you want to show somebody, and that's when they disappear or be quiet. Until then, they're just all the go. I think they know. I think they know. They probably hear you, even though they're far away. They probably know you're there.
Oh, yeah, they do. They know every one of us, I believe. You know, we went up to the mountain, me and Donna, We didn't. We had a little search party together, but a couple guys didn't show up, so just me and Donna went to the mountain, and got all the way to the mountain, about halfway up the mountain, and we were debating on going around the other side because it was kind of getting late, and so we never, but we were sitting on the mountain there and looking around. We came around this one little ridge with a cliff down below and trees and a river. And I could hear this crashing in the trees, and it sounded like a big boulder rolling through the trees, but it wouldn't stop. It was just kept going, you know, like trees breaking, trees breaking, trees breaking, you know, and it just went on and on. But we sat there and looked around. We couldn't find anything, though. We didn't see nothing. But, you know, this kid I growed up with, he's my little brother. He lived up there behind the mountain, under the mountain there. And he knows where this family of Bigfoot live. And he told us exactly where they are, so we know where they're at. We were just maybe, 2-3 hours from where this family lived. But we didn't go around the mountain there. That's where the gold mines are. There's old mines and stuff up there. And we were taking pictures of all these caves. Man, we must have got maybe 8 or 10 caves, you know. Fell down.
And, you know, we all think that they probably hold up in caves, especially in weather like yours, where, you know, and it could be bright and sunny, and 20 minutes later it's snowing.
Yeah, exactly. Once the mountain gets wet, you can't go around it. It's too slick, you know. And Tick, the guy that told me about this, he was 8 years old when he seen him, and he kept it till he's he must be in his 40s now, and he just told me just this winter about it. So, you know, he kept it a secret that long because his dad told him not to tell anybody, and he's got some good stories. He said those pictures I showed him, he said, those ain't caves, those ain't really real caves. I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, I'll show you a real cave, he said, where this thing dug the mountain out, it went straight back, and then it turned to the right, and it went around the corner, and it came straight back. He said, but he never did make it around the corner. It was too stinking there, and when his dad caught him, he gave him a good ear beating, you know, because he couldn't find him. And he said, there's a big cave back there. He said, I don't know what lives in it, but Dad wouldn't let him go around there no more.
Wow. You know, people just don't have, most people, you know, they're really not out into the wilderness, you know. They go out in the country, they go out when they can to go camping or whatever, and get out once in a while. I'm not sure everybody appreciates just how wild of an area you live in. It is really wilderness. It is really country. Very remote and just thousands and thousands of square miles of just open country around you. I guess that's why they call it Big Sky Country.
Yeah, I guess so. But we live maybe 45 minutes from the mountain on a four-wheeler, you know, so we can get there right away, but it takes all day to get to where you're going, you know. We got to follow goat trails and stuff like that. Them are the best trails, so them animals know what they're doing. You don't get played out like crawling over rocks and up and down, and they take a longer way, but they take the flat way. Don't look like it's easy, but it's much more easy when you're walking on a trail.
Yeah. But anything else going on up there by the little pond behind your house, or across from your house there?
You know, I was up there a couple weeks ago, and I couldn't see nothing. There was tracks, bear tracks, deer, moose, coyotes, ducks, or geese, or something. I don't know.
Now, when people gotta explain too, when you say bear tracks there, you mean bear tracks. You have grizzly bears there.
Yeah, yeah, all kinds of stuff, just everything. We sit on the porch and drink our coffee in the morning and watch little deer and stuff, you know. So it's pretty wild here.
I remember I was down in town there, and they have like a little convenience store. And I went in there, and they have bear spray that they sell there. Like, and they have it at 7-Elevens, places like that when you get into Browning. But the canisters of bear spray there are like quarts. They're huge. They're not these little cans that they sell in California for bear spray. They're great big things.
Fire extinguishers.
Exactly. Hey, do they work?
Oh, yeah. Well, I never had the pleasure of running a bear out of here, but yeah, they work. I sprayed one outside at my dog one day, and it came in the house and ran us all out. So, yeah, it's pretty bad.
Wow, wow. So, speaking of dogs, the last time I was there, your dog had a little litter of puppies. They're the tiniest little things I ever saw. You get rid of all those dogs?
We still got three of them left, but we did buy a new one. Donna bought me for my birthday, a little Chihuahua Fox Terrier, and we got him in the house.
Oh, you're such a softy, Bruce.
Oh, well, you know, I don't know what about dogs, but when you come to Browning, that's all you see is dogs and kids, you know.
Well, they just seem to go together, don't they?
Yeah.
And speaking of kids, you must be really proud of your kids with little Bruce and
Tony Ray.
Tony Ray, yeah, they both honor roll students. They both play musical instruments. They both are real active out there in their church and do everything. You must be very proud.
Oh yeah, well we're real proud parents, and they just try their best in everything they do, and they succeed, you know, and sure makes us proud, you know. We try and go to all the different events that they have, you know. Just went to a spelling bee, when was it? 2 days ago, Tony Ray was in a spelling bee. She took first place.
Wow, wow, that's great. That is great. You know, when they were little, they used to make me these little things, like they'd knit things out of yarn and stuff and give them to me as presents. You know, I still have every one of them. Every one of them, yeah.
That's cool. They sure love you. They love the whole team.
Oh, we all love them, too. What a great family you have. How's your father-in-law?
Oh, he's doing great. He's good.
Is he still running marathons?
No. He kind of gives that up. He's just running a 100-yard dash now and then.
100-yard dash. Would you tell everybody how old he is?
He's 86 or 84.
That's right. And he didn't even start running. He started running marathons. How old was he, like 55?
Yeah, he was 55 when he started those. And I think he ran, what, 6 of them?
Yeah, he showed me all his medals. And amazing. I guess it's the fresh air and the good food, huh? Speaking of good food, tell Donna thank you for the last meal we had there.
Oh, you're welcome. Chicken.
That was awesome. She can't good. Thank you, Donna.
You know, I can't wait till you guys come back again.
Well, you know, I can't wait till we get back there. It was some of the best, most enjoyable stuff I ever had. We met a guy one time. I think his name was Tony Little Bear. He was part of that group that had the four wheelers.
Oh, Tony Little Bear, huh? I don't know. Tony.
I think it was Tony. I think it was Tony. It might have been John. I don't remember very well. But he told us a story about him and his cousin who came, and they were going to go shoot some elk and didn't find one, and he shot at a a bear, and it turned out to be a grizzly bear, chased him into the truck, and then this Bigfoot came out and yelled and chased away the bear and saved their lives. And I never was quite sure if that was a parable he was telling me to not, you know, be very careful if we go around these things and don't harm them, or if it was an actual story.
I think it was probably an actual story, because, you know, the Indians around here, the Blackfeet, they believe in them, and some of them are so close-mouthed about it, you know. A lot of different incidents that happen with the Indians that kind of protect the Bigfoot. They look to them as their protector, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy that up here that he found a Bigfoot dwelling under a big tree. Had a bowl. He made a bowl, and it was in that under that tree. And he told some people about it. Story was that this Bob Scriver, a sculptor from Browning, he's dead now, but he wanted to go up there and photograph it and stuff like that. I even asked him about it, but he'd never show anybody the place or get into the story about it. So he didn't want no harm, I guess, to come to him.
I think that's very admirable. Yeah, that's probably the right way. I know that you know, we work with different nations and different tribes all across the country, and they all have different takes on this creature, but they all have it in their oral history. It's part of the history of every nation and tribe out there. And apparently, the Apache in the old ways believe that seeing this creature is an arbiter of the end times. When you start to see it a lot, they all know it's there, but when you start to see it a lot, that means bad things are happening or going to happen. So they're not really too excited when they see them. As a matter of fact, that's why we got called out to the Apache reservation, was to try and calm everybody's fears down. So we got on the radio and explained more about this creature, and it made a big difference. But in your culture, it's just the opposite. And you said something to me one time that I always remembered. We were talking about, do you think it's a real creature or a spirit? You remember what you told me?
Yeah, it's a real creature, but it's kind of put in a spiritual way, you know, because don't communicate with them or anything like that. It's just a spiritual action, I guess you might say, you know, where they come around, they show themselves to you if they trust you and want to show themselves. But you know, they're all around us and we never see them, you know, and just very few people have seen them. And I've seen them, but you know, they never showed themselves to me. I just accidentally seen them laying down in a field, and they waited till I went by, and then they disappeared. So I didn't want to be seen. And we were,
I agree with you. I think that's absolutely true. If they want to, they know we're there long before we know they're there. And if they don't want to be seen, they're not. If they trust you and have nothing to fear from you, then sometimes they don't mind. They just were kind of exciting for them to watch. Again,
yeah.
You know. But when you remember, you said that a spirit wouldn't leave footprints. I thought that was great, and we find their footprints.
Oh yeah, a spirit. It's a footprint. That was a spirit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Have you been following the website?
You know, we get on it now and then when we can run the kids off a bit, you know, and or when we're not busy, you know. But yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just put up this afternoon. I put up a little story about our good friend Alex Hearn. He went up. We had a sighting in Arizona, of all places, but way up in the mountains there, and we actually found a body part. It was, we believe, a toenail, and had some DNA testing done on it, and it came back as not quite human. So it was a real mystery, and they're still working on that and investigating it. And Alex went up there to check it out, and because the roads are so there's this clay, this dry, real dry sandy clay, it snowed while he was up there, and he got up there and couldn't get out. So that was his excitement for this. Just a couple of, he just got out a day before yesterday, I guess, and got us a story and got us all these pictures and sent them back. We put them on the site, so. You know, that was kind of exciting.
Yeah, we've been watching it and reading the updates that you give on that the toenail or fingernail or whatever it is.
Yeah. So that's still going on. I mean, there's still studying being done. They're still testing on it. They're going very carefully and meticulously, and they're taking the time to get it done properly so there's no errors, because this may turn out to be one of the biggest finds in history, you know. And, no matter what we find, it's going to be news.
Yeah. You know, all you got to do is find a tooth now, because you guys been going at it tooth and nail, you know.
Oh, Bruce.
Yeah,
That's pretty good. Well, if you find us a tooth, let us know, okay?
I sure will. I'm going to go looking for one as soon as I can get up the hill. As soon as I can get out of the yard, I'll be looking. But, yeah, we know exactly where my little brother told us where he lived up there. He's got amazing stories, too.
Oh, I can't wait. I know Thomas called him and talked to him on the phone. And we heard a little bit one time on one of the shows, but I've never met him, and I can't wait to get the opportunity to meet him.
Yeah, he's a pretty good kid, you know. He's a hard worker, and he just does what he can for his family to provide, you know. And since his dad died, he's never been back to his old home place, not once.
Wow.
Really be something to get him up there. I hope he didn't forget where. I doubt it, because he's born and raised in those hills, you know, so. We know where it's at, so we don't need him. I mean, I'd sure like to have him come with me, and he can explain all this stuff to us, but I can get back there if I had to, you know. I know where it's at.
Alex, are you still on the line?
I am.
Alex, have you met Bruce Schilt?
I haven't, but you know what? Right from the very beginning, when we were joking around with Marco, as soon as Marco said that, I wanted to chat in, but I didn't want to interrupt, that I remember exactly what Bruce says, too, because I asked you to tell me the story many times.
Yeah, I share it every chance I get, don't I? I'm bad about that kind of stuff, but things that I just find fascinating just stick in my head. So, did you have any questions for Bruce? Bruce, this is Alex Hearn. Alex is a researcher out of Arizona who works with us and helps fill in on the show here when he can, and just a real good partner for us.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Alex.
Bruce, we've spoke before. It's been a while, though, a few weeks back on the show.
I didn't mean
to say you repeat yourself either, because I ask you to tell me.
I do.
Yeah, they make fun of me, Bruce.
Oh,
man.
But no secrets.
So, Alex, do you have any questions for Bruce while we got him on the line?
Temperatures right now in your area, what's the weather? Is it snowing still? Is it clear? What do you have to cover?
Oh, no, it's nice. It was a little cloud cover today, but the sun kind of peaked out now and then, and it was about 50 above, and that's t-shirt weather here. Snow.
I was going to say, we one morning while we were up there, because the snow came out, we sat out in lawn chairs out front, and it was like 5 degrees, but you could still feel the sun warm up your body.
Yeah.
We sat out on a sunny day enjoying it. It was about 5 degrees outside.
Yeah, it's, you just never know. You know, you can't listen to the weatherman because he can't predict it either. You know, it's just, he says it's supposed to snow the rest of the week, but it's nice out. So I don't believe him right now.
Do you have any snow cover on the ground? Is the ground got snow cover or is it dry?
No, it's wet. The snow's melting down now, and it's saturating the ground, and it's pretty lot of moisture in the ground right now. But there's still snow banks in the coulees and willows and, you know, shaded spots and stuff.
I'm guessing you must be around 5,000-6,000 feet elevation.
Yeah, about there. Yeah.
That's pretty much, you're describing the Apache Reservation too, you know, it kind of climbs from 4,000 feet down at Fort Apache all the way up to 6,000-7,000 feet up by the casino. And a little further, you know, of course it can go a lot higher if you go to the mountains.
Yeah. The mountains are still pretty white, you know, but it's clearing out down this way.
You said there's lots of caves. Are the caves in the mountainous area, or are they in?
Yeah, right in the mountain, right alongside of the inside. You know, the mountains are so jagged, they're straight up and down, you know, and the caves are into the mountain, you know.
So that's why they call those the Rocky Mountains. That's what we're talking about. Way up in the Rocky Mountains.
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty rugged. Well, I mean, all mountains are, but some of them call them mountains, you know, and they're just little hills.
Are you making fun of us here in California?
No.
It's a big thing. California, too. I think it's the highest peak in the continental U.S. there, isn't it?
I think, is it Mount Shasta? One of them is pretty high, yeah.
One of them's, the one in Washington might be slightly higher, but I think it's right there with it, a couple hundred feet different. And then you go up to, what is it, Mount McKinley, I guess, is the highest, right?
Yes.
Well, all right.
Well, Bruce, it's been a pleasure getting to talk to you again, and you make me feel homesick. I want to come see you and see the family, and soon as the opportunity comes up and everything comes together, we'll come and see you.
Okay, that sounds good, you know. We've been waiting a long time.
Yeah, it's way too long. It's a long time to miss my friends.
Yeah, we miss you folks too, you know. Everybody that's on the show, you know, and all the people that's out looking for Bigfoot and come back with these terrific stories, you know. Wish I could meet them, but I guess I'll just have to listen on the radio or the telephone.
Well, there you go. There you go. You're always welcome. So, if you ever get down here into this part of the country too, you come and see me now, okay?
Yeah, Happy Camp.
No, I'm in Sacramento right now.
Oh.
I still have my property up in Happy Camp, but I don't live there. Ever since my daughter passed away, I haven't been back. How's that? I'm sorry.
See, that was about the time you came over to Browning.
Yes. Right after. Yeah. Right. Just before then. Haven't been back since.
I feel bad about that, you know, Bob. But guess, you know, everything happens for a reason, you know.
Well, she's in a better place than I am, so.
But,
you know, I got to be happy for her for that. In that case, I'm sad for me because I miss her so much, but I'm happy for her because she's in a better place.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, you know what? We'll see you when we can, and we thank you so much for being on the show and for helping us out here and for sharing all your stories with us. And stick around and listen up. We're gonna see if we can put Alex on the grill for a while and let him get into some detail about how he spent the last couple of days.
Great. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. And take a night to Don and the kids for me.
I bet.
So, Alex.
Yes, Bob.
I want you to go into some detail now. Let us know just exactly what you did and how you got in there and how you got out.
You got 6 minutes.
Everyone knows why I was there. If we listened to the show last week, and if you didn't, you can hear it in the archives because Marco had it posted just a few hours after the show, as he probably will tonight. So I was up there investigating Jerry Merrill's report from last week. Of the, we'll just call it the Seligman area. And then we all know we got the toenail out of the cabin up there and also in the Seligman Ash Fork area. So I figured going up there to investigate Jerry's location, it's not really public a campgrounds area, all private property. So I couldn't really camp in the area. I didn't really think I could. You know, maybe we could, but we need to ask first. So I figured I'd use Larry's cabin as a base camp, and of course Larry was there 2 weeks prior, wanted to be there last week. I had 4 days I could have been there, but couldn't get up there because of the weather. So I figured we'd knock off two birds with one stone. Yeah, we'd get a few time at the cabin and some time at the Three Humps, Three Peaks location, as I called it. So if you go to the website, and I think I just posted that on the forum, I'll do it again, the Searching for Bigfoot website that has the story, you'll know that I went up there, I investigated Jerry's location, and then I went back to the cabin to set up base camp, which I did. Needed a few things, of course, because we haven't been up there in a while. So I went back to town to get a few things and go back to Jerry's location because I wanted to be there at dusk when the animals come out and start roaming around, you know, the nocturnal animals or just the animals that roam everywhere that you can, you know, that come out at night that are going to be out for the night. So that's what I wanted to do. And I did that. And the weather was changing. It was a beautiful day. The road into the cabin at first was the best I've ever seen at my Java Bob. No rocks. It was smooth sailing the whole way in. And it was pretty dry, but not solid like it is in the summer. It was a little softness to it, which was actually nice to drive on. So I'm at Jerry's location. Dusk kind of heads in. You can see from the pictures that it was getting cloudy. Those pictures were taken the second time I was there. And I guess those clouds were coming over Seligman. I wasn't that far from Seligman, maybe 12 miles, but it rained in Seligman proper, and I had to go through Seligman proper to get to the cabin. I got to the cabin, I got to the entrance to the cabin. The road was a little bit sloppy. It had been like flurrying and sprinkling the whole way back, but it looked like it poured heavy in Seligman. I had left a sleeping bag out to get dry that had gotten wet in the trip from my water tank, and it was just soaked from the rain, so it didn't help to get it to hang it out. So I barely made it into the cabin. I slip in a little bit at the entrance where the pipe is, and you got pictures of that too. That's where Larry told me I would have problems leaving. So I knew the next day, if it kept raining, it was going to be sloppy there. And sure enough, when I got back to the cabin, it started snowing. And right away, I mean, it was heavy. Within a few minutes, there was too much snow on the grill to light a fire, which is no problem. I was just by myself. I didn't need it. I was just going to do it for something to do when you're out there, you know. We had the potbelly stove inside the cabin, and you also got pictures of that. I pretty much knew I wasn't going to be able to get out in the morning, but I also knew I was going to have to try it. So
I let my wife know and let a few other people know that it was snowing pretty heavy. Nothing wrong yet, you know, it was beautiful, actually. And in the morning I woke up, the snow was covering the trees, it was beautiful. The nicest that area has ever looked, actually, at least that I've seen. So I loaded up the truck. I didn't walk the road first like I should have done, like I did the following couple of days. But I loaded up the truck and I tried to make it out. And I knew that area where Larry had told me to be careful was soft, so I tried to line up a little bit. I was going to go wide to the left so I could get a running start over it. And that was a mistake because when I went wide to the left, I sunk right in the dirt right there. And I stayed there till about 5 that night, struggling. Sent people some text messages that I was, you know, in a little bit of trouble and just wanted everybody to know in case anything happened. I mean, I was safe. I'm 200 yards from the cabin, maybe a little more, but and in mud and everything, but not going to die or nothing at that point. So I let everybody know I was in a little bit of trouble, but at that point, safe. And then I finally, at 5 o'clock, after I gave up, tried all day, and I mean, I worked hard all day long, finally got the truck unstuck. I moved about 50 yards and got it stuck again. That time I thought I was stuck for good, but before it got dark at 7, I somehow got it unstuck that time, too, just being stubborn. And you can see the pitches. I mean, the truck was down on the frame, so I don't know how I got it out of there, just shoveling like a madman, and drove it right out forwards, which is kind of impossible, but I did it. And I had a rock behind me and a tree next to me. It kind of just slid right next to him, so it wasn't going anywhere else but forward, and it did it. Got it back in the campgrounds, you know, near the cabin. Got my stuff back unloaded in the cabin just before dark, my lanterns, my bedroll. Spent the night there, let everybody know, had a few prayers from Father Ray, I'm trying to go quick. And the next morning, I think with everybody praying for me, and maybe a little help from the old man of the mountain, as I said in the story, he had already helped me push the truck out, I think, or at least maybe even the people that weren't there that were thinking about me did, because I was getting text messages from 10 and 20 people. Mitch, Vic, everybody, they were all, everybody was great. AP, everybody was answering my texts. Java Bob and Tom, and I was calling.
1 minute.
Great. 1 minute to go. Well, the next morning, you know, Father Ray told me when we talked last that at 12 midnight it was going to be 32 degrees. At 4 a.m. it was going to be 26 degrees. And at, you know, 6, 7 a.m. as I talked later with Java Bob, it would be cold enough and light out, could probably get out of there. So I got up, I walked the road, it was glistening, we got pictures of that too, made sure it was hard. It wasn't totally solid, but it was good. And so I got the truck loaded and tried my way out, and I made it past that point, which was probably the hardest point, or at least I thought it would be. And I called everybody and said, I'm out of the property now, I just got to drive the road. There was a couple of points in the road where you got to go uphill, too. And by that time, it had warmed up a little bit, so it took me a little longer than you know, normal, of course. But I made it out of there safe. And when I got to the entrance, I called and texted people. And I think I was so excited, I might not even said everything right, you know, because I guess I was a little bit distraught there for a while before I knew I was going to get out. And,
40 seconds.
So I'll some people, but I and of course Java Bob, the most important one, is the one I guess I forgot to call, or at least forgot to tell him I was totally free. But he was good about that. He only spanked me a little bit, right, Java?
Well, like I told you, and I meant every word of it. Knowing you're safe is more important than the rest.
Ten
of the rest
seconds.
Of it's just
everybody
fluff.
Guys, take a night.
Good night, everybody, and thanks for listening.
You got it all in, I think.
1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries to find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
Who are these prints up in Baldwin?
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams, break in day. We'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is
like everything else. They just were too realistic
and
to be
frozen like a tree.
Somebody turned manufactured
the hand
and
was freaking
into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot lives. A movie at www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests, Java Bob and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. What brought them together? Reason for the facts.